from the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. What a day. Passing of the Pope at the age of 88. That's how we woke up early this morning, our time. 5 hours, 6 hours, six in the morning of their time. But for the most part, you look at a situation where people knew the Pope was sick in the hospital for 38 days. They did not foresee him passing after he appeared on Easter Sunday. But that is indeed the case. We'll talk about that. Obviously, it's a titanic event, but it'll be dominating a lot of the headlines for the next 3 weeks as the effort to go through the ceremonial things about passing of a Pope and then naming a new one. Also today, on a minor note, Easter egg roll on the White House. It's kind of cool. They always have fun on that, and it'll good to see the First Lady out and about again. We have standing by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, now Columbia professor, and also a special welcome to a brand new affiliate, WUCT-AM-FM, in Cookeville, Tennessee, News Talk 94.1 and 1600 AM. Look forward to having you guys with us every single day. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
If you could choreograph it, you couldn't choreograph it any better. The day that we believe Jesus rose from the dead and shares that victory with us, in which we trust by divine mercy, Pope Francis now shares in abundance. You couldn't have choreographed it better.
I'll tell you, I didn't think you can be wrong, Cardinal Dolan. Too bad you might be too old to become Pope, but you'd have my vote. Pope Francis, the 266th Pope, passes away, becomes the first Latin American and first Jesuit to lead the Roman Catholic Church. We'll see who's next.
Number two.
And so when we think about the U.S. and us as being a superpower, China is highly dependent. So we've allowed ourselves to become dependent on their supply chains for critical minerals. That's the one piece that we've got to undo.
Absolutely. We have to do that in pharmaceuticals. China warns, world, don't deal with the United States while the U.S. meets with India and South Korea, so screw you. Tensions rise on tariff drama as Trump details why this war we must win.
Number one.
There's another camp of Democrats who really feel like this is playing into Trump's hands. When it comes to immigration, this is an issue that Trump is still very strong on. So this is really encapsulating the broader fight that has been playing out in the Democratic Party since day one.
There you go. An NBC correspondent weighing in. The border battle immigration scrum has Democrats digging in versus Kilmer Abrego Garcia. Why? And some high-ranking Dems think the focus benefits this guy named Donald Trump. With us right now is Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Did you start yet at Columbia, Mr. Secretary?
I've been out there a couple of times. I can't forget if you're more shocked by the fact that I'm at Columbia or that someone wants me as a professor, Brian.
Well, professor, yes. I'm thinking West Point, you know. But I especially on that campus. But I love the fact that they hired you. It shows maybe they want to broaden things out. Mr. Secretary, so many different ways to go. But first off, on the Democrats' decision to dig in against this guy, Abrego Garcia, Kilmer is somebody that was picked up. You got to read the police report. They say that he has got every indication he's MS-13. Then he gets picked up human trafficking. He beats his wife. And a senator from Maryland is trying to get him back?
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable in terms of the bad politics. Guys, hard to figure out why Senator Van Hollen would go down there to defend a guy who's clearly a bad person and certainly deportable under a number of provisions of U.S. law. But there's questions about due process, whether there's a mistake. But to defend and try to get this guy back into the United States is an enormous political mistake. And I think most of the Democrats can see that. And I think most American people can see that this is precisely the kind of thing that they voted for President Trump and against Kamala Harris for. We want to secure our borders. We want a sovereign America. And this is emblematic of that very same discussion we had back in November of last year.
Right. And here's Senator John Kennedy on what you said, which is right. They said that on the process, they shouldn't have put him there because he should have been. He said in one of his testimony, my life's in danger if I go back to El Salvador. Okay, could have went to any other country, but under the Aliens Enemies Act, he would go back there, and he just also told someone, I didn't fear for my life in El Salvador. Here's what Senator Kennedy said, cut 18.
This was a screw-up, in my opinion. The administration won't admit it, but this was a screw-up. Mr. Garcia was not supposed to be sent to El Salvador. He was sent to El Salvador. The Democrats saying, look, you know, we told you Trump is a threat to democracy. This is going to happen every other Thursday afternoon. I don't see any pattern here. I mean, you know, someday pigs may fly, but I doubt it.
So whether it's screw up or not, I just cannot believe that's where the stake goes in the ground. So there's a few things going on right now. It's Saturday in Rome. They after a 4-hour meeting, the U.S. delegation and the Iranians, I guess technically indirectly, they had a meeting and there's enough to continue. Do you worry about this process being lengthened or do you like the fact that we're talking to Iran?
Yeah, Brian, I'm troubled by the fact we're having these conversations. It does concern me that this is the path that the Iranians want to lead us down. I don't think President Trump will let this come off the rails and sign up for a crappy deal like President Obama did. But the Iranians, no doubt, are trying to figure out can they keep enriching? That's something that we don't let our friends, the Gulf Arab states, do. Can they continue to have a ballistic missile program? That's something that we've tried to halt the North Koreans from doing. I'm hopeful that these conversations are continuing because the Iranian regime has decided that they are at their weakest strategic point in decades, that they've lost their capacity to promote terror with their proxies, and they know they need to bend the knee. I haven't seen any evidence of that. And so this is what troubles me, is that I think the Iranians are simply playing out the string, hoping they can get through another couple years and then deal with the president next, who's not as serious about protecting Israel, protecting our Gulf Arab allies, and frankly, protecting the United States of America as well.
They met with Lavrov and another Russian official, did the Iranians, before this meeting. What role is Russia having? What do you think they're asking Russia?
You know, Brian, we've talked about these different issues before. They are connected. There's no doubt they're talking to the Russians. The Russians have a presence in the Middle East. The Russians have not only bought equipment, but provided resources and money to the Iranians. There's no doubt that those two countries are working closely together. Throw in that the Chinese Communist Party is also weighing in on the side of the Ayatollah and the Iranian regime because it presents risk to Israel and drives the United States crazy and occupies our attention via focusing on them. This is not just the Iranians alone. This is a global geopolitical set of issues. And I'm confident that President Trump understands that as he begins these conversations with the regime.
So in Ukraine, we know that Secretary of State Marco Rubio came out on Friday and said, look, we're not going to keep doing this forever. If I don't see more of a sincerity, in my words, in these peace talks, we're going to move on. This is not our war. We're going to move on. I sense that's a bit of deal making that Marco Rubio is doing.
Yes, I think that's right. I think he was actually signaling to both parties, both to the leadership in Ukraine and to Vladimir Putin, you guys got to come off your silly positions and find a solution. I think that's what he was trying to drive to. I think it's going to require a lot more effort from the United States to put pressure on Russia. Again, I've not seen Vladimir Putin show any indication he's prepared to compromise one bit. Perhaps I'm wrong. I'm not in the room, but it's going to take real pressure. He's got to have a sense that he could lose, that the West could win before he's going to find in his heart a place to set down his weapons and create a more peaceful condition on the Ukrainian border.
It looks
Russia.
Like this, Mr. Secretary, it looks like there is going to be a minerals deal could be announced this week. So that's important. But the Wall Street Journal.
Great.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say that's great. I think it's great the Ukrainians are prepared to do that.
So I hope they use that money to buy weapons from us. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that Ukraine is under pressure to respond this week to a series of far-reaching Trump administration ideas for how to end the war, which includes allowing Russia to recognize Crimea as annexed. Your reaction?
Yes. Look, I there's going to be a compromise. I think that's a mistake to begin in that place. And whether it's Russian recognition or global recognition, international recognition actually does matter. But, Brian, the most important thing that we come to a conclusion on is this. We need to stop the killing. There's lots of people being killed. Second, there has to be a security arrangement led by the Europeans, underwritten, manned by the Europeans, that prevents something like this from ever happening again. This is the deterrence that Joe Biden lost, that President Trump had for 4 years. And when you lose that deterrence, getting it back is really difficult. And that's what the Trump administration is finding. To get this peace agreement is incredibly difficult because Vladimir Putin believes he can continue his march. We can't let that happen. And the Europeans need to step up and make sure they do everything necessary to prevent another day like what happened back in February of 22.
But I think that Vladimir Putin understands that you have a president that would actually say, I will do business with you the day when peace starts. And don't they think on some level he's tired of looking at his checkbook and seeing so little money in revenue, the brain drain, the amount of money they're pouring into, they're borrowing and then pouring into their war machine? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, I hope you're right. I fear that you're wrong. I fear that Putin concludes he can survive 2.5 more years. He does understand President Trump and the pressure we put on him for 4 years. That's why I think he didn't take on Ukraine, invade Ukraine in Europe on our watch in Trump's first term. But I think he believes he can drive his economy through. They're still selling plenty of crude oil around the world. His biggest challenge is he's having trouble finding people to throw into the meat grinder in the western part of his country. And so you see he's not making much progress. He's not advancing materially along the border. We would have thought that the Russian military could have really made huge strides. They've not achieved that.
I want you to hear what Brian Fitzpatrick, the former FBI agent who's now a congressman from Pennsylvania, was with Zelensky over the weekend. Cut 40.
If you look at Russia, right, obviously it's huge geographically, but a population of about 150 million people, about half the size of the United States, one-fifth the size of Europe, a total GDP of $2 trillion. That's the GDP of the state of Texas. So they are large, but they're weak, and they're proving that weakness by the fact that they can't even successfully prosecute a war against a much weaker neighbor. So we got to stop, you know, being fearful or bowing down to Russia. We need to stand up to Russia. We need to defend Ukraine, support Ukraine. And if it's done the right way, this will end positively. It's all about peace through strength.
So do you want to take that on?
I couldn't agree with Congressman Fitzpatrick more. In the end, the West has to win this. Has to be viewed as a defeat for Vladimir Putin, or we will have real problems with Iran, real problems with China. And we know this. The Russian military has epically failed. It was a terrible strategic decision that Vladimir Putin made. And President Biden, it was such an epic failure to talk all the time about the things we would not do because that encouraged precisely the invasion that Vladimir Putin engaged in is how President Trump got stuck with the problems that we have today.
I just want you to, lastly, because I know you got to get to class, I hear the bell about to ring. We know the vice president's in India dealing with Modi and his trade representative. And I think it's important also to point out that South Korea is coming here, especially in the wake of what China said yesterday. They are warning countries around the world to not have talks with us, or else they're going to pay the price. It's the world is ignoring it, but it says the United States has abused tariffs on all trading partners under the banner of so-called equivalence, while also forcing all parties to start a so-called reciprocal tariff negotiation with them. They are saying behind the scenes, urging people to cancel their meetings with us.
Brian, I don't think any of those countries, I don't think India, I don't think the South Koreans are going to cancel their meetings with us. I think they all know that this is the nation they want to have as their longtime security partner and economic partner, not the Chinese Communist Party. And it is pretty rich to hear the Chinese talk about trade abuses as they've been violating every trade rule in the book since they entered the WTO a couple of decades back now. So it's almost laughable. We're going to get through this. I'm confident President Trump will get these trade agreements pushed through and we'll get economic growth here in the United States. And that'll be good for every American.
And Mike Pompeo, when you walk the campus, do you hear anything from people, from students?
I do. I do hear things from time to time. Most of the folks have been really kind and really nice so far, Brian. I'll keep you posted.
All right. I worry about your welfare. So I want to make sure you're okay with these kids.
I appreciate that, right, man. Have a wonderful day.
Go get him, Mike Pompeo. Bottom of the hour, James Trusty. Your call's next, 1-866-408-7669. The passing of the Pope, what's going on with the tariff trauma. Are you experiencing some already? I hear small businesses paying a bigger, feeling more nervous than the bigger businesses. I understand that. Do you understand the need to reconfigure what we do as a country? We'll discuss that. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
He was such an eloquent preacher of divine mercy, but we also offer gratitude to God for the gift. The gift that he was. We don't call him Holy Father for nothing. He's the father of our family. And there's a death in the family. And we're saddened. We use a Latin phrase these days, starting about 5 hours ago. Sede vacante. The chair is empty. The chair of Peter is empty.
Yeah, that was... Cardinal Dolan, who was just on our couch on Fox and Friends literally a half hour ago, and said that the thing about this Pope is they were friends. And he said when his, when his mom died, he called him. When his sister-in-law had cancer, he called her. And, you know, they had a great relationship, invited her over to St. Patrick's. But this Pope was controversial in that if you look at the Catholic Church, there's tradition. And he said, why are we not thinking about same-sex marriage? Why don't we have a bigger role for women in the church? I do have a problem with American capitalism. What else was he saying? You know, he was very friendly with Joe Biden, very distant from Donald Trump. But yet it was Donald Trump's Supreme Court when he put those Supreme Court justices on that overturned Roe v. Wade. But yet it's okay for basically Joe Biden to be pro-abortion, as well as Hillary Clinton, as well as Kamala Harris, much friendlier with him, with them than with others. But we'll see who the next one is. You'll have the pomp and circumstances and everything that goes on with that. I'm looking at the cover of the New York Post today. So you talk about the problem, and that's what I talked about on One Nation last night. I love that President Trump is focusing on these Ivy League colleges and their anti-Semitism. Oh, and they're going to fight back. Good luck with that. I hope you go and slam Cornell next. You know what they just did? Cornell University, who has a huge anti-Semitism problem, has invited Jew-bashing entertainer Kalani, who has a long music history, has a long video that starts with Long Live the Infantada. She'll perform there on May 7th. Sparking critics to accuse the college's move as tone deaf. You think? Let's see them deal with that. So, again, what's happening at Harvard, what's happening at Columbia, you just heard me reference it with the Professor Pompeo now. I love the attention they're getting. Harvard thinks they have the higher plane and they have public sentiment. I cannot tell you how much disdain the average American has for the Ivy Leagues, who look down on those who can't get in, and for those who try to get in. And when you turn down valedictorians to bring in some high school student from Qatar, I think you tick a lot of people off. This is a fight, I'm telling you, they don't want to have. And I think it's going to get worse. It's going to start in Columbia. It's going to go to Harvard. I think Princeton's going to take them on, too. I'll talk about that, the legal case for it, denying their 501c3 status, nonprofit status. Talk about keeping grant money from universities with James Trustee, as well as what the Supreme Court did late Saturday night.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
In Abrego Garcia's case, the Trump administration admitted in federal court that he'd been wrongfully abducted and sent to a prison in El Salvador. But rather than fixing the problem, as the Supreme Court has said, in terms of his need to be use their efforts to facilitate his release, they reprimanded the lawyer who made that case. So they need to bring him home.
And one of the reasons they said that's back in 2019, not to go back to El Salvador, he said that my security will be jeopardized because MS-13 is there. Well, a couple of things. I don't believe him for a second. If you read the report, the police report from the gang unit, he's a member of that gang. Number two, unless he's a an informant by Sammy the Bull. Number one or number two, that problem's gone. Almost everybody's locked up. You've seen the prison. You could walk the streets of El Salvador. There'd be more of a chance of getting being a victim of a crime in New York than El Salvador. James Trusty joins us now, former federal prosecutor, attorney, and former defense attorney for President Trump. Jim, welcome back. Your thoughts about what Chris Van Allen said? Abducted, is that the right word?
No, then I guess everyone who gets removed from the country has been abducted. I mean, he's making it sound like Taken 3, where a poor innocent guy was dragged out of his bedroom and taken to some foreign gulag. Look, the reality is, you know, this is an overblown situation for political reasons. Everyone's kind of enjoying the politics of it. Legally, the guy had a hearing. It was an administrative hearing that was appealed. There was an immigration officer, then an immigration judge, then an appeal of that, where they found he was MS-13 and they found he was deportable. And what's interesting, and you touched on it, you know, the same people that are shrieking that he's not a member of MS-13 were the ones back then that said, hey, look, you can't send him to El Salvador because actually the rival gang, 18th Street, will kill him. So that's the biggest admission of gang membership in the whole story is don't send me to El Salvador because I am MS-13. And that seems to get kind of washed over by the Van Hollens of the world.
Right. I mean, you got to see this stuff in this unit. I mean, this guy is called by the gang unit. He basically said everything except for MS-13 tattooed on his chest. I mean, they say that Burgo claims to be in good health, given that he has the opportunity to make a phone call. There's no big emergency, but he does have tattoos on his fingers that say, see no evil, speak no evil, and I hear no evil. And he's wearing a Bulls hat. And then the informant that came and saw him in 2019 said, yeah, this guy is a higher up in MS-13. But it doesn't matter. They say they were trying to distract from the whole story. Now, do you think that having said that, they should have scooped him up and just recategorized him and then sent him over?
You know what's kind of crazy here is, like, what's the end game for either side? And if the end game is to bring him back to Maryland, that's the big victory for, quote, due process, he comes back, and I could see the administration saying, okay, fine, whether you're MS-13 or not, you know, you are illegally here, you're going back. Like, I don't think there's any scenario where he sees sunshine. If he comes back to the United States, he's going to be in detention. He's going to have, I think, a very abbreviated hearing addressing whether the circumstances for withholding removal ever changed, and they have. And then he's right back on the plane to somewhere. So I also wonder, Brian, you know, in terms of kind of heading off the lawfare litigation here, what if Bukele said to the next group of politicians, all right, fine, here's the deal. Take him where you want, other than the United States, and we'll facilitate. You want to take him to Guatemala and to be perfectly happy in a different country? Then let's go. And I think that would actually go a long way towards mooting a lot of the issues that are frantically making their way through the court system, often without any reliable record.
You know, I just look at, I know you don't do politics, but I just do think it's important to point out there are a lot of people think this is not even a good move for Democrats, like this guy named Gavin Newsom, cut 20.
This is the distraction of the day, the art of distraction. Don't get distracted by distractions, we say, and here we zig and zag. This is the debate they want. This is their 80-20 issue as they've described it.
They're 100% right. So every day you're talking about this guy, well, they'll just roll out more and more things about him. Number one, his wife wrote up 3 pages why she was so scared of him, how he beat her up, hit her with a laptop. They were scared for her welfare. And he had basically had an order of protection that kept him away from his wife for, I think, 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't really deny that now. The recent interview of her was one of these things like, well, he's a great husband now, blink, blink. I mean, it struck me that there's a lot of what I'm familiar with from prosecuting of battered spouse syndrome showing up there where, you know, she feels very scripted. She better say the right things because he might be coming back or his friends might pay her a visit. So, look, the sad thing, Brian, there are worse illegal aliens currently in this country in terms of actual criminal records, people that have lengthy convictions for a variety of serious crimes that are still here. So is he the best target for removal with some hiccups? Probably not. But he is a good one, and I think the politics is kind of driving the story a little bit, probably a little bit too much from both sides. I mean, I'd love to see, you know, the administration say, okay, fine, he's not supposed to be in El Salvador, now what? Or to actually take on the idea that we did try to facilitate his return, and you heard what the president of El Salvador had to say about it, so what's next?
So the conservatives are raging right now against the Supreme Court decision on Saturday night to stop the deporting of another 200 or 300 illegal immigrants to El Salvador. They said because they didn't get due process, but the Aliens Enemies Act said they did. Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because the Alien Enemies Act, you know, if you don't like a law that's been on the books for a long time, you say, oh, they dusted off this thing from 200 years ago. If you like it, you say it's been established law for 200 years. I actually think it's a legitimate kind of war power for the president. I think it's a very open question legally whether you can say that an open Southwest border is tantamount to an invasion. I think it's a fair argument. I don't know what the Supreme Court would do with it. But look, the bottom line is I think what the Supreme Court is telegraphing is, number one, we really don't want to have to intervene and make these decisions for the executive branch. Number two, we do want to have some semblance of due process. And the difference on the Alien Enemies Act cases, the Venezuelans, is they've never had any sort of hearing. You know, the guy in Maryland had at least a hearing where they heard him out and said, you're a gang member and you're deportable. These guys, I think the answer is they should file habeas petitions down in Texas where they're locked up. Those could get denied very quickly. But it's also a safeguard if any one of them happens to be like a, you know, a plumber from Cleveland that had nothing to do with Tren de Aragua. So, you know, there is a legal avenue available in Texas where it should be. And I think the Supreme Court, or at least part of the Supreme Court, is saying enough of the venue shopping, enough of the obstruction. And if you read what Alito said the other night, enough of this kind of histrionic interventions by the courts without even having a factual record developed.
So would you say this? So you round up the Venezuelan, the gang members, the tattoos, and you got 200 ready to go. Being that the court ruled, you can ship them out, got it, but they show up their day in court. Are we really going to watch these guys lawyer up, Jim Trusty, and before they got sent out, are they going to present a case that people have to research it and present it in a hearing? Is it going to be like you or I would have?
Well, to the heart of your question, yes, we're going to blow money on these hearings. But look, when the ACLU came into court, you know, again, picking their venues carefully, they announced we represent all whatever the number was, 268 Venezuelan subject to removal. When the court started asking them questions about their clients, they said, well, we haven't met any of them except for these eight. So we're in this bizarre world where attorneys can announce, I represent a class of similarly situated individuals. I've never spoken to 260, but trust me, I represent them. So if that's the case, then I think what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Then if you have habeas proceedings down in Texas where the ACLU files on behalf of all of them, then you can have either a very quick hearing or, frankly, you could have judges deny it on the pleadings if they think it's insufficient. So it is a burden to have these types of hearings, but it's not an unusual one. It's not usually a successful one. But if it's a safety valve to protect one or two people who probably shouldn't be on that plane, then great. We can take care of that. It just slows things down a little bit, but it doesn't change the overall arc of where this stuff is going.
So I asked Andy McCarthy this last week, and he said that's just the way it is. As you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of people are allowed to stay here because of special dispensation because of the horrible countries they're coming from. I'm talking about Haiti, Venezuela, Cuba. And there might be another. They got special dispensation to come here under Joe Biden. Well, Trump ended that. That was an executive order. Trump ended that. And in turn, the judges have said, yeah, well, before you send them back, you got to interview each and every one and make a case that they got to be deported. It does not seem fair to me that one executive order could trump another executive order. Why not send them back en masse?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's cumbersome to have any additional process here. You're right that the executive orders and, frankly, the immigration law, you know, if you want to dig down, one of the things I think is the big villain here, asylum or claims that you can't send me back to this particular country used to be entirely limited to government persecution. Don't send me back to war-torn country X, or don't send me back to Maduro in Venezuela because he will torture me. Now you can pretty much say, oh, I'm in a gang and I'm afraid of those other guys. Don't send me back to El Salvador. I mean, I don't know what the logical limit is. Like, you know, I ticked off my sister-in-law at Thanksgiving. I can't possibly go back to that country. Asylum claims seem to be getting dignified by immigration courts to kind of an absurd level. But again, remember, all of this is administrative hearings, Brian. I'm not as fearful of the delays when you're talking about administrative hearings. Maybe we need more immigration judges to speed things along, but you're not having like jury trials and all of the kind of chaos and confusion that could come in to something with a full-blown trial-type process. You're talking about, you know, half-day administrative hearings, couple of witnesses testify, judge makes a decision, and on we go.
All right, James, the other thing is, and I can't get the exact ruling now, but I think the Supreme Court's going to look at the role of district judges in president's foreign policy. What do you expect the ruling to be?
Yeah, it all pivots around Justice Roberts. You know, Justice Roberts has been historically so concerned about the reputation of the court and, frankly, a lot of the attacks that they endured under the Biden administration, I think gratuitous attacks, that he wants to seek consensus. He doesn't want to be seen as putting his finger on the scale of hot political issues. Problem is, and I think the conservative part of the bench with him is getting increasingly frustrated that we're dignifying lawfare, that district court judges issuing nationwide injunctions is something that's got to stop, that emergency hearings should really only be emergencies. We shouldn't be making these kind of findings because of how the attorneys argue the case. And so I think we're going to see at some point a more significant smackdown of the idea of every federal court jumping to attention to help obstruct the administration's efforts to enforce the law.
Yeah, it looks like they're trying to be political heroes, so they can get to the a speaking engagement at the DNC in a couple of years. Jim Trusty, thanks so much.
All right, Brian, good talking to you, man.
You got it. Listen, we come back, we open up the phones for the first time. We had a weekend of Easter. Now we have the passing of a pope. We got a naming of a new pope. We got the president's tariff war. Deals could be a couple of days away. How will that affect everything in the economy and immigration? The battle over in El Salvador. I never saw this one coming, but why I believe it's a fight that Trump does not mind fighting.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
What everyone's worried about is June, July, and August. Are we just pulling all this demand forward from the summer? Because people that were going to buy stuff naturally through the next 6 months are saying, look, I'm going to save the tariff. I'm going to buy it now.
So that is Gary Cohen, former National Economic Advisor to President Trump during his first term. And there's a lot of buying right now, a lot of economic activity, people trying to get underneath the 90-day period where everything's a 10% tariff, but not much different unless it's China, which is, you know, it's definitely going to be a challenge to small business, but we have to reconfigure how we're doing things. So numbers aren't bad, and Gary Cohen's asking himself, is it only reason it's not bad? Is it because everyone's just doing some preemptive buying? Overall, there's got to be a fundamental restructuring, especially when it comes to national security with rare earth and things to that nature. I'm looking at all these stuff. I'm looking at the president getting close to deals with South Korea, Japan, Israel, Vietnam. This week, South Korea is coming. And then the Vice President Vance already met a second time with the Italian Prime Minister, who's talking to the EU. You notice they have not hit with retaliatory tariffs. So I think there could be something major brewing here, and the market will respond. There's no question about it. I don't think there's any question about it. But what I think also has to happen when it comes to this rare earth, that's what worries me the most. And this Secretary of Interior, Doug Burgum, who knows everything about these minerals, a lot of it has to do because of his tech background. A lot of it has to do with how well he knows the land and he's a builder. and just his knowledge as being a governor. Here's what he said we got to start doing again in this country. Cut 31.
We've basically been a war on mining in this country for anything, not just rare earth minerals, critical minerals, but base minerals that we would have. And so under President Trump, it's not just drill, baby, drill. It's going to be map, baby, map, which is we've got these materials in our country, but then also mine, baby, mine.
That's what I like to see happen. So he wants to boost energy. I got it. But also with this Ukrainian deal on rare earth, that's going to be huge. I know that they, you know, I've been schooled on this. I didn't grow up with this. But they say getting the rare earth is one thing, refining it is the other. And that's why I think that we got to start prove it. We got to aggressively start bringing it in, buying it from friendly countries at the right rate or mining it in their country and then sharing the wealth with them, with their products, because we can refine it quickly and expeditiously. Here's more from Doug Burgum, because he believes that energy will be another key on this. Here's what he said to Shannon yesterday. Cut 32.
There's one project which is going to be announced, Resolution Copper Mine. This has been a 30-year saga in terms of getting permitting. And in 3 months, President Trump has got this rolling again. And, of course, copper is key for electronics. It's key for military uses. And we've also, there's a special under the powers of the emergency authorities, the energy emergency have, which includes the critical minerals that President Trump wisely put in place on day one. There had been only two mining projects ever that had been put on under an authority called Fast 41, which is an accelerated permitting. President Trump added 10 more mining projects to that this week. And all of these things are going to help us in the competition against China, who's really cornered the world market around many of these important minerals.
And I would just put Secretary Burgum, say, hey, you know the job? Just go corner rare earth around the country. Don't take it. Buy it. Gary in Daytona, Florida. Hey, Gary.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. Just two things. Justice Roberts needs to make a fast track to an orthopedic surgeon and have his knees rebuilt. It's bizarre on how they'll always leak out that they're really disappointed in these district judges, but then they come down with some bizarre rulings. And I'm just hoping that the next time Democrats sitting behind the Resolute desk, that the people on the other side file as many grievances with Trump district judges. I never thought I'd say that because I don't believe it's the right thing to do, but it's bizarre on how many filings they've done.
You know why? He's so afraid of it looking too partisan, so people start ignoring it, that he goes out of his way. It's a huge responsibility. I get it. But also, he's a conservative judge. He knows to do the right thing. People respect if he does the right thing. Enough lower courts, in my view, are doing the wrong thing, not just for going against Trump, but making it blatantly political.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With a message for everyone paying big wireless way too much. Please, for the love of everything good in this world, stop. With Mint, you can get premium wireless for just $15 a month. Of course, if you enjoy overpaying, no judgments, but that's weird. Okay, one judgment. Anyway, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan, equivalent to $15 per month required. Intro rate first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See full terms at mintmobile.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. I'm here. This hour is going to be big. We're going to be joined by Brian Fitzpatrick as well as Michael Goodwin. And we're also going to be following a lot of breaking news, including the stunning news that President the Pope passed away at the age of 88. We weren't expecting it. Also, great news for us, welcoming yet another great station into our family of affiliates, WUCT, AM-FM in Cookeville, Tennessee. News Talk 94.1, 1600 AM. They'll be with us every day, so that'll be great. Also, Easter egg roll at the White House. They're going to have some fun today. It's good they're going to see the First Lady there. That's going to be great. And Meta will provide an AI-powered experience and photo opportunity. Amazon will have a family photo opportunity celebrating the day. YouTube, owned by Google, arranged for the Bunny Hop stage. So I brought this up to the press secretary, and she said, well, the media is trying to spin it negative. Corporations have always had a role. I don't think anything negative around that. Corporations playing a role in events like marathons and picnics, that fuels this stuff. I love it. But I guess you took it the wrong way. And we'll discuss that. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
If you could choreograph it, you couldn't choreograph it any better. The day that we believe Jesus rose from the dead and shares that victory with us, in which we trust by divine mercy, Pope Francis now shares in abundance. You couldn't have choreographed it better.
That is Cardinal Dolan with us this morning. Pope Francis, the 265th Pope, passes away at the age of 88. He was the first Latin American Pope, first Jesuit Pope to lead the Roman Catholic Church. We'll see about his replacement.
Number two.
And so when we think about the U.S. and us as being a superpower, China is highly dependent. So we've allowed ourselves to become dependent on their supply chains for critical minerals. That's the one piece that we've got to undo.
Right away. And I want you to do that, Secretary Burgum. China warns, world, don't deal with the United States while the U.S. meets with India. Really? You're telling the world to deal with you guys, the Chinese, the commies, over us? Nice try. South Korea is coming anyway. Tensions rise on the tariff drama as Trump details why this is a war. Economically, we must win.
Number one.
There's another camp of Democrats who really feel like this is playing into Trump's hands. When it comes to immigration, this is an issue that Trump is still very strong on. So this is really encapsulating the broader fight that has been playing out in the Democratic Party since day one.
Absolutely. And that is a NBC correspondent on the Meet the Press yesterday. The border battle immigration scrum has Democrats digging in versus Kilmer Abrego Garcia. Why and some high-ranking Dems think the focus is all wrong. It'll benefit Trump. We'll see if they're going to do it. I just saw this poll out by Yale among young Democrats. The top two Democrat vote getters right now, the only two with above 50% approval, Stephen A. Smith and Senator Fetterman, which goes to show you, in many respects, Bill Maher was right over the weekend when he said AOC and Bernie Sanders getting big crowds is actually no big deal. Michael Goodwin joins us now from the New York Post. Michael, I'll talk about the media and what the president's doing and how he's trying to make sure they're fair the best he can. But before we get to that, your thoughts about the Pope.
Well, good morning, Brian. Look, I think the description of him as the most progressive pope in modern times is accurate. And I think that if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly, the conclave, one of the issues is going to be about that, how much further in the progressive way of looking at things. There is a politics to this, and the politics are very much about, I think, what you had with this pope and his idea on migrants, which, of course, is a huge issue in Europe.
Come one, come all. Come one, come all, right?
Yeah.
Let everybody in. How dare you say no?
Yeah, and as many people have noted, the Vatican has a wall around it, and so this idea that that the Pope or any religious figure should be setting these kind of progressive ideals before the faithful and assumedly expecting the faithful to echo that, I think is going to be challenged. Now, I don't know who the most likely candidates for succession are. I mean, these are always fascinating conclaves, and we'll know, I think, probably within a couple of weeks after the funeral, et cetera. But it is, I think, one of those hinge points for the church, given the decline of the West. And, you know, the West is the home of the church. And if the West is declining, the church is also threatened by that. And so I think there are a lot of issues that could sort of be undercurrents in this new selection.
Yeah, we'll see what I guess we're going to see what's going to happen. We'll see how it plays out. That'll be a few weeks of dominating at various times the headlines. So let's talk about something that affects us directly, all of us, no matter religion, and that's money. And President Trump has got an approval rating at 47%, as high as he's ever had over the last two terms in a divided country. I think he got 49.9% of the vote. So considering he's making decisions every day, that's pretty extraordinary. Where he's underwater for the first time is on the economy. I believe that's temporary. Here's what Hakeem Jeffries sees. Cut 30.
Donald Trump is the president, And in terms of his approval as it relates to the economy, it was his biggest strength on January 20th. Now it's his greatest weakness.
He went on to say this, cut 29.
Donald Trump and Republicans promised to lower the cost of living. In fact, on day one, costs aren't going down. They are going up, and they are crashing the economy in real time and, in fact, driving us toward a recession.
Well, I would say this. Actually, the prices are going down, especially on eggs. But this whole trade standoff has got people with a lot of anxiety, especially who are in the market. Your thoughts?
Yes, look, I think this is a big test for the president because, as even Jeffrey acknowledges, the economy, along with the border, were the top two issues. And President Trump thumped Kamala Harris and the Democrats on both of them. And so the border, he has delivered. It is sealed, and he's now in the process of the deportations, which is causing all kinds of kerfluffles everywhere. But this is moving on from the campaign promise to the implementation of it and the after effects. But the economy is clearly taking a hit. There's a lot of, the stock market is wobbly, but I think underneath the stock market is a sense of uncertainty. And I think that's something that the president has to keep an eye on, because he was certain in the sense that people knew his economy was better than Biden's in his first term and that it would be again in the second term. And so he's thrown the ball up in the air now, and it hasn't come down. It's going to take a while, obviously, for these trade things. But your report earlier about China beginning to threaten countries, it just shows how strong China feels that it would dare to say that kind of thing. I mean, it's ready now, it seems, for the battle. It's ready for the battle for number one. And China is right, feeling its oats over this. And that's why I think the trade tariffs and the other measures the president is taking are so important. If he can resolve this, the sooner the better, because I think the unease in the economy, the uncertainty, the headlines, the markets, all of this is working against him. And I think I don't know if he bit off more than he can chew, to use that old line, but this does seem to be spiraling in ways that he didn't. I don't know if he knew it would happen this way, but he didn't warn the country that this. He said there would be some pain, but I think this is going beyond that. And the longer it goes on without a solution in sight, I think the more it robs him of the confidence and the trust that he built up all through his first term and through the campaign.
So here's what they said. China on Monday accused Washington of abusing tariffs and warned the countries against striking a broader economic deal with the United States at its expense, ratcheting up the rhetoric in a spiraling trade war. True. You know where Vice President Vance is today? India. You know who's meeting with? The trade commissioner over there. You know who's coming this week? South Korea. You know who we met with last week? The president of Italy, followed up by the vice president meeting with her right after. I think we're going to be announcing a cascade of deals. Here's what Austin Goolsbee said, cut 27. As you know, supposed to be apolitical, Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, cut 27.
I'm still hopeful, and the people that I talk to out in the Midwest are still hopeful that on the back end of this, it would be more like what Secretary Bessent said, that this could be a spark to lead to a new, he called it, golden age of global trade. If we can get through this, it's important to remember the hard data coming into April was pretty good. The unemployment rate around steady, full employment, inflation coming down. It's just a desire of people expressing they don't want to go back to kind of 21 and 22 at a time when inflation was really raging out of control.
Right. What he wants to do is reconfigure a lot of these relationships and even them out, even with allies, and he wants to stick it out. If you could start working these deals out, Michael, I could see then you have the big, beautiful bill going to be ready in around Memorial Day. If that happens, I mean, it could be like a rocket ship.
Absolutely. I think people are primed to support the president's economic policies.
But this is something of a curveball. And I don't think people saw this coming. The prospect of inflation returning, the fact that that there's so much uncertainty, and I can't emphasize that enough, Brian. I think when it comes to families making decisions about spending and travel and anything like that, it's about confidence. And right now, all of this talk of a trade war, of inflation, of maybe unemployment going up, people, you know, corporations laying off people because they feel like they're going to lose their businesses or reduction in businesses because of the tariff issue. All of this undercuts confidence, and it's not so much the actual numbers, it's the confidence that I think the president needs to focus on. He needs to try to begin to restore confidence, and I think the way to do that would be, as you suggested, Brian, some trade deals. I mean, make a deal with Japan. Make a deal with the European Union. Make some deals that show people this is not just helter-skelter, but that there's a real plan and it's producing results.
I hear you. Now, lastly, just real quick on your column, the AP being told, hey, you know what, you're not your style book is not conducive. You're not acknowledging the Gulf of America. You're not acknowledging what we're telling you. So we're kicking you out of the press corps. Now they got to be putting back in and given the same access as other wire services. And they decide to rotate the wire services in. Now, you said normally you'd be in support of the AP, but not here. Why?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that they're clearly being punished because they won't agree to making it the Gulf of America. And that's not right. On the other hand, it's clear that the AP thinks it's entitled to special access. And that, to me, reflects sort of what's happened to the Washington media. They have deemed themselves to be the gatekeepers, and they decide. And one of the things that I really like that the Trump administration is doing is democratizing the media so that there aren't these entitled legacy outlets that always get the best seats, the first dibs, the exclusive interviews, all of that. They get, you know, the AP always gets to ask the first question at a press conference. Well, Trump has done so many press conferences, so many at homes, right, in the Oval Office and things like that. So this idea that the AP is special, that it gives you something, that's old school. It's not true anymore. And then finally, Brian, just the AP has become another woke version of the New York Times. They just hate Trump. Every article oozes it. All their fact checks are about Trump wrong, Trump misleading. I mean, they've become another woke outfit trying to tell the public how to live, what to think, what's true. They don't have that command of trust anymore. That, as I often say, they used to be boring but trustworthy. Now they're boring and untrustworthy. It's a decline in the media, as exemplified by the Associated Press. So I'm not on their side in this fight. I think the White House is right to open it up to more unconventional new media outlets so that the whole country can get what's going on. Then you don't have to filter it through these legacy outlets.
I hear you, and I see it. I like the variety in these meetings. Of course, you're going to get the CNNs who would think Trump does everything wrong. But every once in a while, you just get people just saying, what is your approach to the trade war? Rather than, is it true you're crashing the economy? And so you just got to be able to let him talk. And then there's plenty to follow up on to be direct. You just don't have to be dismissive, and it would be help to be fair. Thanks so much, Michael Goodwin.
And you see, these outlets, they all cover the same story the same way. I mean, it's like a monopoly. You got to break up monopolies.
Absolutely. You see it on the Sunday shows. Everything was, will Donald Trump fire the Fed chair? Every single question. Will Donald Trump send criminals to other countries? I'm like, did you guys get together before you do your old network shows? It's crazy.
Right. And these are the networks, Brian, that didn't care about the Hunter Biden laptop, right? They didn't care about censorship, right? They didn't pay attention to Joe Biden's decline. They said it wasn't happening. I mean, on and on and on. They act like a monopoly in the restraint of trade. Open it up.
I hear you. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Your call's next. Bottom of the hour, Brian Fitzpatrick, congressman from Pennsylvania, just back from Ukraine. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Not everyone is careful with your personal information, which might explain why there's a victim of identity theft every 5 seconds in the U.S. Fortunately, there's LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year by visiting LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's not about the big crowds that come out to you when you're talking in a festival or wherever they are. I think it's because I think Bernie showed up at Coachella. That must have been fun for the fans. It's who shows up on Election Day. And I just don't see that's the ticket. I mean, Cory Booker, I know you've worked with him. I like Cory a lot from my home state in New Jersey. Made a speech for 25 hours. Again, just each other off. This is just not what's going to get the job done.
I 100% agree. If he had a 24-hour speech to filibuster something, and still, I think that Ted Cruz did something similar, not as long, about Obamacare. All right. At least I knew what it was about. He just was just against Donald Trump, who just had an election that he won. I don't know why people are saying that he's catapulted himself among the leaders. But here's a poll that came out. It's just really interesting. Confidence in congressional party leaders. In 2001, Democrats had 66% approval. In 2025, it's now down to 25%. In 2021, it was at 49%. Republicans, 66% in 2001, confidence in their party leaders. And now in 2025, it's at 39%. Not great, but considering they're doing a lot of direct radical things, not, I would say, transformational things with Trump, not understandable. But that's still 10 points above where Democrats are right now. This guy, David Hogg, is the best gift to Republicans yet. I'll explain.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
President Trump has done more in 90 days to solve this war, the largest war in Europe since World War II, than they did in the previous 900-plus days. And he's driving this towards solutions. And one thing I noticed with President Trump, and been with him before, is don't give him a problem unless you have a solution. And I think we've got a pretty good solution set. The minerals deal is one of them. Also, go to a comprehensive ceasefire. When I talk about a comprehensive ceasefire, it's sea, air, land, industrial as well, for a period of at least 30 days, and then it builds to a longer peace deal, a permanent peace deal as well. And I think we're on a good path.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I'm not there. But I know that Vladimir Putin's anything but responsible and dependable. Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick's got an FBI background, now House Intel and Ways and Means Committees, chairman of the subcommittee on the CIA. Congressman, just fresh off a trip to Ukraine. Congressman, what did you find on the ground? It was different this time when you visited with Zelensky.
Hey, Brian, happy Easter to you and your family. Spend obviously a lot of time in country. I've never gone as far, obviously given the status of the war and the location of where we went, got a much more up close and personal view, getting to see the terrain, talk to the troops on the front line, everything from their, old school artillery units to their more state-of-the-art drone operations and everything in between. Just a really unique insight. And I also, before going out there, Brian, had a lengthy one-on-one conversation with President Zelensky, who I personally like a lot. There's not too many people on this planet that would turn down an evacuation facing certain death and be willing to die for their country, and he was. I have a lot of respect for him. He's got a very tough circumstance. We talked a lot, Brian, about the the memorandum with regard to minerals. Everyone's got to understand why there's some apprehension, and they're doing it, and, you know, they're all in. But the last time Ukraine signed a memorandum, an international memorandum of this magnitude, was 1994, the Budapest Memorandum. They were the third largest possessor of nuclear weapons on the planet. They voluntarily gave them up for vague security guarantees, only to be reneged by none other than the Russians, right? So people need to understand the historical context there.
Well, one's a transaction deal. I'm assuming we're going to be we have the refinery. We'll be able to refine a lot of their rare earth. They're not able to mine anyway. And my hope is they'll use that to buy a lot of the weapons and missile defense that'll keep them safe forever. Do you sense that when this deal is signed, there'll be a transaction so they can get the weapons to stay alive from us?
Well, that's the whole point. I mean, obviously, a big part of this agreement is having the U.S. be an economic partner and be invested, you know, as a government in the country. So there's sort of precursor implicit security guarantees right there. And as far as the weapons transfers, Brian, obviously myself and several of my colleagues in the House and the Senate are keeping a very close eye on this. You know, clearly Europe needs to step up. The president, President Trump, you know, is absolutely right about that. Europe has been very, very neglect and deficient for years. NATO was formed back in 1949. They've had a lot of time to build up their defenses. They have not. So they do need to step up. But we still need to be providing some unique weapon systems that only we can provide to them. That was one of President Zelensky's asks. He's willing to pay for them. You know, any aid he's willing to do in the form of a loan. All of this was very, very important to President Trump during the last supplemental. So I think there is a path there on how we can fashion it. But, you know, Ukraine is interested in peace. They absolutely are committed to it. This Easter ceasefire by Putin was an absolute joke. He was bombing Kharkiv hours after he declared a ceasefire. He's just a propaganda expert. He always has been, always will be.
So do you think that – so I see this on the Wall Street Journal. I'm sure you did too, that Ukraine is under pressure to respond to a proposal that Russia gets recognized as annexing Crimea and excluding Kyiv from joining NATO, and in turn they get some type of ceasefire. Your reaction to this is the rough framework of what's been offered?
Yeah, I don't know that detail in particular, Brian, but I can't say for certain, but I got to imagine President Zelensky will not accept that. I mean, because doing so would be rewarding a dictator for invading a country. If the message that's being said and the precedent that's being set is that if you invade a sovereign nation and you get rewarded by territorial gains, then what message does that send? Is Xi Jinping vis-a-vis Taiwan or Kim Jong-un vis-a-vis South Korea? It sends a terrible message, right? The message ought to be go back. And if they want to create a DMZ, a demilitarized zone similar to North and South Korea for those contested areas, I think he would agree to that. And as far as NATO membership, that is not something that any country can impose either affirmatively or negatively on any nation. That's their decision. And the alliance is not to accept them. So, you know, I think those are absurd demands. And I think it also sends a wrong message, Brian, that if Putin gets those things, then he will have been validated and vindicated in his decision to invade. And that would be a very bad precedent to set.
So right now is time is on whose side?
That's a great question, and that is a question that I repeatedly ask out there because you get different answers depending on who you talk to. Conventional wisdom has always been that time is on Russia's side just because they have more people, they have more weaponry, and they can just wear their opponents down through a slugfest. But I got a very different message from the frontline troops out there. You know, when I asked them about some of the, you know, territorial gains we're hearing by Russia in recent days, they brought up Avdiivka. That was a major pivotal point, a city that fell. But hearing and listening to them out there, they told me that Avdiivka fell because Russia just leveled the town and there was really no shelter or any area for Ukrainians to have cover. So they moved back. This is their response to that, Brian. If Russia is so well suited, why are they begging China for weapons and why are they begging North Korea for soldiers? Everybody that's fighting for Russia is not fighting because they believe in the cause. They either have conscripts that are doing it for very generous sums of money, or they have mercenaries that are doing it for their freedom. None of their soldiers have the morale like the Ukrainian soldiers who are fighting for their freedom. They analogize their fight right now to the United States' fight in 1776 with the Continental Army. There's parallels visibly in all their stations over there.
So, Congressman, I agree with you, but do you think it's possible, and I spoke to a Trump official over the weekend, to get a weapons package through Congress? I think the answer is no.
Well, they said that last time. And we got it through. Now, granted, that was, you know, the last Congress, a very different makeup, different White House. All I can tell you is this, Brian, there is an outcome determinative number of us in both chambers, including in the House GOP, that believe that this is time sensitive, that it's existential, and that it's legacy defining. You can't say that about many issues. So we have tight margins. And with those tight margins comes a lot of bartering and negotiating on a lot of different types of bills. So we are going to inject this into the mix of all sorts of legislative priorities, both domestic and foreign, to make sure that, you know, overall we're addressing the things that we need to address. Last time, Brian, myself, Don Bacon, Mike Lawler, Nick LaLota, a number of us filed a discharge petition on this very issue. We are not afraid to do so again because we believe it's that important. And I want to emphasize, Brian, this can be – and by the way, last time what we did, we tied it with border security. So it was, I believe, an excellent piece of legislation because it addressed legislatively the gaps in border security. It was called the border Defending Borders, Defending Borders, Defending Democracies Act. As President Trump has proven, there's a lot of this is solely in the purview of the executive branch. Joe Biden decided not to enforce the laws that we had on the books. President Trump has decided to enforce them. But there are some issues that specifically have to be addressed by Congress. For example, addressing or modifying the credible fear standard for asylum, the catch and release provisions that we want to codify. And if we can tie that to military-only Ukraine funding, not humanitarian aid, only military, required that all the money's got to be spent in the United States and that all of it is fashioned as a loan and not a grant. I don't see how anybody can oppose that because all the money that would be going to Ukraine, it's not money. It would not be any money, any dollars. It would be equipment only made inside America, and they'd have to pay it back. So I'm confident, Brian, we can get that done.
I hope so because, you know, I'm firmly in Ukraine's court. There's good guys and bad guys. They're an imperfect democracy, but they're still allied to us. And, man, are they showing they know how to fight? I do think they should draft 18-year-olds. The fact that the average age is 27 and they don't draft 18-year-olds, I find befuddling.
Yep. And Zelensky would tell you, that is on the table, so know that. Zelensky would tell you that he needs to somehow preserve the future of his country. And, you know, he's already had 20,000, and that's a conservative estimate, Brian. 20,000 children that were kidnapped, ripped away from their parents, and sent to re-education camps deep inside the Russian territory.
All right. So glad you went over there, Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick. Thanks so much. Appreciate your insight.
You bet.
You got it. When we come back, Father Michael Duffy joins us. He was the priest at the Diocese Center of Rockville, Sarah. He did the Jonathan Diller ceremony, the passing after the assassination of that police officer. He's going to join us and tell us what's it like when a pope dies from his perspective. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you could choreograph it, you couldn't choreograph it any better than what happened. The last time we saw him, Easter Sunday, the last words, a blessed Easter, as he gave us his blessing. You couldn't, the day that we believe Jesus rose from the dead and shares that victory with us, in which we trust by divine mercy, Pope Francis now shares in abundance. You couldn't have choreographed it better.
That is Cardinal Dolan. He was on our couch today and also had a press conference at St. Patrick's after the passing of the Pope at the age of 88, a guy that had a chance to meet the Pope. Father Michael Duffy joins us now from Rockville Center, Long Island. Father Duffy, welcome.
Brian, thanks for having me on this morning. Appreciate it.
And people might remember Father Duffy. He did the Jonathan Diller funeral, did a fantastic job. You did
Thank
meet
you.
The Pope. What, Father, what's your reaction to his passing?
Sure. So I've had the chance to meet the Holy Father about five or six different times over the last couple of years. Certainly just a stunned shock this morning. Nobody expected this when we woke up. In fact, I was woken up by one of my brother priests in the rectory where I live, banging on my door and with the bells tolling at 5 o'clock in the morning here at St. Agnes. The Holy Father, you know, has obviously been in poor health and has been declining, but we thought he was getting better. And he was in Rome yesterday. He met J.D. Vance, had an audience with him, and then he greeted the city and the world at the end of Easter Mass. So it really does come as a complete shock.
Besides the Pope being the pinnacle of the Catholic Church, for you, what was he like as a person? What was he like as a leader of the Catholic Church?
Sure. So you know, the Holy Father for us as Catholics is we have a personal relationship with him. He's our Holy Father. And so we're certainly in mourning in a very intimate and personal way. And this Holy Father in particular, he's been Pope, you know, for almost all of my priesthood. The church is going to be different without him, right? There's a wound, there's a hole now in our hearts as we wait for the new Holy Father, whenever that comes. So we're almost like sheep without a shepherd right now on earth.
So where did you meet him?
Sure. So I've had the chance to be in Rome a number of times for different groups and pilgrimages that have been good to the Holy Father. And as a part of those groups, I've been their chaplain, and they bring me in to be with them. And I've always been presented to the Holy Father as you know, by a cardinal or archbishop, and he says, "Holy Father, this is Father Duffy from Rockville Center." And I don't think the Pope knows where Rockville Center is. So he looks at me and he said, "From Ireland, right?" I said, "No, Holy Father, from New York." He says, no, you must be from Ireland." I said, "No, Holy Father, I'm from New York." So it's the only time in my life I've ever corrected the Pope, you know. But he would laugh and smile, he always enjoyed that. I swapped the little white hat that he wears, the Zucchetto. I brought him one as a gift, and he gave me the one he was wearing to take home. So we have this little connection here in Rockville Center to him. And I would always say to him in broken Italian, "Holy Father, the people here at Rockville Center send you their love and their affection." And every time, four or five different times, he'd say to me, "Father Duffy, please ask the people in Rockville Center to pray for me." And so then as the pastor, I'd be able to come home and say in the cathedral, "Hey, folks, I have a personal direct request from the Pope to all of you to pray for him," which was really a nice connection to have.
I hear you. Here's Jonathan Morris. He was a priest, and he got out of the priesthood, but
yeah,
still.
God bless him.
Yeah. Do you know him?
I don't. But
he's been on. Yeah. So
he
was on today. Cut five.
And let me speak to our evangelical Protestant viewers right now who might say, "What does this matter to me?" Honestly, as an American, as a believer in traditional values, it matters a lot to you. Why? Because there is no other leader of Christianity, whether you're Catholic or not, there's no other leader that has a platform and a voice like the Pope. There are a lot of conservatives who did not like this Pope. They'd say, "Hey, we like Pope Benedict the 16th or John Paul II. Bring us back to those days." But yes, he had different views than previous popes, but he was still preaching the gospel.
So your thoughts about that, because that is true. He didn't really say a lot of great things about us. Didn't like the fact he was trying to enforce our borders. Very upset about the immigration policies. Thought America, capitalism, didn't really embrace the capitalism, right?
Listen, I think we've all had moments in our lives where we don't agree with something with everything that somebody says, and yet we still love them, right? You know, I don't get along with everything that my sister might say, but she's still my sister. I still love her. There's something different that goes on with the Pope. Because he's the Pope, he represents 2,000 years of tradition. Unfortunately, I really do believe that our Holy Father was very often used by people that wanted to paint him in a certain way. This Holy Father upheld traditional values every step of the way. He never permitted same-sex marriage. He never permitted abortion. He never did anything that was contrary to the teachings of Jesus Christ. And yeah, there were some prudential things that some people may not have liked, but I do think that he was misinterpreted by an awful lot of people. Like, for instance, he said early in his pontificate, if somebody is gay and seeks the Lord, who am I to judge? He was talking about a very specific moment of a priest who was being celibate. And if he was gay, then who am I to judge? Well, of course, if somebody's celibate, if somebody is chaste, if somebody is seeking the Lord, none of us have the right to judge. But people took that line out of context and said, look, the Holy Father is approving X, Y, and Z. And so I think we all got to step back and today of all days, pray for his soul, pray that he meets the Lord who he loved and served, and not jump to the American left-right political perspective, because we can get in trouble as Catholics. You know, as Roman Catholics, our job is to love the Pope, to listen to him, to give him deference, mm-hmm. but also to make sure that what we're listening to are his actual words and not what somebody is saying he said. That many times was not true over these last 10 years.
All right, but he passed away at the age of 88, and now we're going to have the next few weeks. A lot of focus is going to be on the Vatican in Rome, Italy. Yep. Father yeah. Michael Duffy, thanks so much for your insight and your up and your the personal perspective on what he was like as a man. Thanks,
Brian. God bless you.
All right, back at you. All right. Go to BrianKilmeade.com, by the way, if you want to see me on stage, not as good as the Pope. I will not get those type crowds, but I'll be in Dayton in June. I'll be in Dallas in August, and I'll be in Richmond in September. BrianKilmeade.com.
Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way through on this hour. Of course, stunning news about the Pope passing away at the age of 88. We got that Easter egg roll taking place right now for families and friends on the White House lawn. That's always a fun outing. Good to see the First Lady there, too. And the President of the United States, but then it's back to work. Nothing really stops as they try to get this tariff war under control. And by the way, the J.D. Vance is over having consequential meetings over in India. Busy Monday. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
If you could choreograph it, you couldn't choreograph it any better. The day that we believe Jesus rose from the dead and shares that victory with us, in which we trust by divine mercy, Pope Francis now shares in abundance. You couldn't have choreographed it better.
Right. Pope Francis, the 266th Pope, passes away. We'll find out the latest, what happens next in the Roman Catholic Church industry.
Number two.
And so when we think about the U.S. and us as being a superpower, China is highly dependent. So we've allowed ourselves to become dependent on their supply chains for critical minerals. That's the one piece that we've got to undo.
And they've got to get some refineries, not only to be able to mine the minerals, but to refine the minerals. The world won't deal with the United States. If you deal with the United States, you won't deal with China. That's actually what the Chinese are telling people. Meanwhile, India obviously ignoring it. South Korea is coming this week. They're ignoring it. Tensions on tariff trauma.
Number one.
There's another camp of Democrats who really feel like this is playing into Trump's hands. When it comes to immigration, this is an issue that Trump is still very strong on. So this is really encapsulating the broader fight that has been playing out in the Democratic Party since
yep.
day one.
The border battle immigration scrum has Democrats digging in versus Kilmer Abrego Garcia. Really? Why I and some high-ranking Democrats think this focus benefits Trump. Look, I wish you have a guy here who, for some reason, in 2019, a judge said, well, he just said, I don't want to be sent back to El Salvador. MS-13 was his worry. We thought. Now people say it's a different gang. So here we are, and President Biden didn't care. Came here illegally. Looks like he's involved in human trafficking. With the other FBI director, with Kash Patel, he gets arrested. With the other FBI director, he gets examined. They take his picture and everybody in the car, but they let him go. Beats his wife, chronicled three straight pages. But that doesn't stop Senator Van Hollen from making a two-day excursion on your dime to go and help him out, because they say in the court ruling he shouldn't have been put on that plane and sent to El Salvador. Why? Is he MS-13? Yes. Has it been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt? No, but you don't have to. The gang unit cited everything. It's in the police report. I will post it at some point, but you could get it easily yourself. It says he was with three of the known gang members. He's got the tattoos on his fingers. He has got the bull's hat on. And an informant says, hey, you know what? This guy's a higher up in MS-13. And why is he hanging out with them at that Home Depot that night when he was arrested to begin with, or was detained to begin with? But that didn't stop Chris Van Hollen. He says it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who he is. It's that Donald Trump shouldn't have sent him here. Cut 11.
What Donald Trump is trying to do here is change the subject. The subject at hand is that he and his administration are defying a court order to give Abrego Garcia his due process rights. They are trying to litigate on social media what they should be doing in the courts.
What is he talking about? Number one, I guess originally there was something there that may have stopped him when you have 267 brutal gang members on a plane shackled. So there was one country that he shouldn't have been sent to was perhaps El Salvador. But the reason why is because of the fear of MS-13, which has been eliminated, and they've all been jailed. I mean, I just watched a 60-minute show. It is safer to walk in El Salvador than almost any city in our hemisphere because they got the military and arrested everybody. No, zero tolerance for gangsters. So that's what happened. So they want to dig in and say, well, he deserves his due process. That's where you want to stand? A wife-beating MS-13 member that had one country that he thought his security would be threatened by, which, by the way, when he was questioned and he was picked up this time, he says he wasn't in fear for his life if he went back there. But I don't want to slow you down. That's what the big dispute is. I just find it hard to believe that this is the best move for Democrats to try to get their feet underneath them. I thought you might want to talk about the economy. So what some people are saying. Here's an example. Melanie Zanoma is a NBC Capitol Hill correspondent. Cut 21.
There's another camp of Democrats who really feel like this is playing into Trump's hands and that they're taking the bait. They would much rather be talking about the economy and the tariff fight. So they are worried that they're just on Trump's turf right now when it comes to immigration. This is an issue that Trump is still very strong on. So this is really encapsulating the broader fight that has been playing out in the Democratic Party since day one.
You think he's really strong on it? Wall Street Journal report, 53% of voters approve of the way he's handling the border security issue. 43% disagree. Look at these numbers. 250,000 Border Patrol arrests in a single month. That was last year under Joe Biden. The number dropped to 48,000 in December. And last month, 7,000 in March. The whole border. Almost all of them have been turned around. Gavin Newsom, cut 20.
This is the distraction of the day. The art of distraction. Don't get distracted by distractions, we say, and here we zig and zag. This is the debate they want. This is their 80-20 issue as they've described it.
Okay. We'll discuss this today, but you know the bigger picture? I think that they stopped a whole flight from leaving midnight. ACLU filed a lawsuit on behalf of the illegal immigrants, mostly from Venezuela, being shipped to El Salvador, even though the Supreme Court already said they can do it under the Aliens Enemies Act, but they wanted to have some sort of due process. There was some, but not good enough. At least has to be examined and paused. A lot of people say, okay, don't worry about it. It's still going to get done. We'll see. Because every time there's a flight of 260 that leave our country, the message for other gangsters, evildoers, is it's not even worth being a gotaway. Because if you get caught, you spend the rest of your life in a supermax prison. Do you understand that? Showing people what could happen, consequences, will stop the next wave. That's why I'm convinced that he stopped it for 4 years until some other Democrat gets in there and doesn't realize how good they had it. But listen to Jasmine Crockett. Republicans benefit when you talk about illegal immigration. They also benefit when this Texas congresswoman speaks. Cut 23.
I don't even think he has any outstanding cases versus the guy that still had cases pending when he was sworn in on January 20th and also has 34 felony convictions. So listen, I don't want to hear anything from the Republican Party about how they're trying to keep us safe when their fearless leader is actually the biggest criminal thus far that we have seen, because I haven't seen anybody with a rap sheet that looks like the president's.
Okay. I don't know why she's talking like she's Cardi B or some type of rapper. She comes from a big middle-class background with an Ivy League education. So she talks like that. I don't get it. But here we go. Anybody who followed that case in May or June knows the president's numbers boomed leading up to the first debate as soon as that conviction came down. Because when people looked at that case, and I'm talking about even Governor Cuomo, who wants to be Mayor Cuomo, they looked at that case and go, there is nothing here. Zero. So if you're going to keep on leaning, and so is AOC, goes to the in front of these socialist crowds and leans on the 34 convictions, you're not going to get anywhere. Same thing about getting this Obrego Garcia guy. You're going to get nowhere. He's a wife-beating gang member that may or may not, through the Aliens Enemies Act, qualify to go to a different country. If he does come back, he will come back here to a way station in Texas. They'll put him on a different plane and send him to a different country. He's done. Will that be a win for Senator Chris Van Hollen and the four other Democrats who I guess are using their own money to go there and visit this week? Yes. All right, I'm going to go inside politics in a moment with Tim Murtaugh. Bottom of the hour, we're welcoming former wrestler Kane and former wrestler Tyrus. They're going to be with us. Mayor Glenn Jacobs, he's out over in Knox County, Tennessee. And Tyrus are going to be here. And we'll continue to talk about everything that's important, as well as WrestleMania over the weekend. But Tim Murtaugh, the senior advisor to the Trump campaign and author of Swing Hard, In Case You Hit It. Tim will be with us in a moment. Don't move.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think that the president still enjoys favorable ratings on immigration policy. I think that this last week has been really good for Chris Van Hollen. I think it's been really good for Donald Trump. I think if we're focused on immigration, you're talking about somebody who's a wife beater, who has gone, as Senator Kennedy said, in front of judges 17 different times. I think it's hard for a lot of Americans to feel sympathy on this. And I think for the president and his team, we have a lot of the central planners, as you said, Maria, inside his trade policy team, destroying $12 trillion in market capitalization. They'd much rather be talking about immigration than what they're doing on the economy.
So when he's talking about that, it's really Peter Navarro. That's whose idea this was. And I know the president's always wanted to do tariffs. I understand that. But the image is probably more Peter Navarro and less Scott Bessent. I think more Scott, the bigger role that Scott plays, the better I think Wall Street will feel and most of America will feel, because he's been a great guest on our show prior to him getting this job, as is my next guest, Tim Murtaugh. He's senior advisor to the Trump campaign and author of Swing Hard, In Case You Hit It. Tim, welcome back.
Brian, good to be with you again. Thanks
so
for having me.
What's your take on what your former colleague Mark Short said?
Well, I mean, I think it shouldn't be a surprise for anyone that President Trump is employing tariffs to try to protect the American economy, to try to protect American manufacturing. I mean, let's remember that the guy was already president once before, and he used tariffs to great effect the first time he was president. And on the campaign trail in 2023 and 2024, he said that this was exactly what he was going to do. And so it really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. I don't know why anyone is reacting in the way that they are. And I think it has revealed what the coalition was that the president stitched together to win in 2024. I mean, you have people like the United Auto Workers putting out statements praising the guy. This is a major labor union saying that the president is doing right by the American worker. And having working people, union members, support him is a large part of the reason why he won as big as he won last November.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. But do you think that, who do you think is the best spokesperson to speak about that outside the president?
Well, outside the president, of course, I think he's always going to be the best and most effective guy. I think Secretary Bessent is an excellent spokesman. I think he does a great job. But the facts are on the president's side. I really do think that when people go out and say, look, this is a president who is actually standing up for American workers and American manufacturing across the country in a variety of industries, I think that is the winning message, regardless of who the messenger is.
Yeah, the market is down significantly already, almost 900 points. So how important is it to start cutting deals now, do you think, with South Korea, India, Japan, people who seem to want to?
I think it's going to be important to cut the deals when the deal is right. The purpose of tariffs is to try to get the United States to be treated fairly by other countries around the world, because, as the president says, it is known, it is not disputed, that the United States has been getting ripped off by a lot of countries, not just China, but certainly including China, for a long time. And when the president slaps tariffs or has the threat of slapping tariffs on all of these countries, they come running to the negotiating table. And the point is to get the best deal possible to make sure that the playing field is fair for American workers. And so, I mean, the president will know the time is right. I think that when countries call and say, hey, listen, we want to talk this over, then you sit down and you strike a deal, because previous to the threat of tariffs, there were no deals being made. So when they come running, that's the time to sit down and say, okay, let's talk about what's actually fair. I think the president is handling this exactly right. And I think it's a mistake also to look at this in a snapshot or a window of just a week or 2 weeks and what the stock market is reacting to day to day. Very, very few people have their money invested in the stock market that is looking at something that is a two-week window. Most people look at the stock market as an image of years at a time, way down the road. So for people to get all this nervous about what the stock market is doing over the course of 1 week or 2 weeks, I think is really short-sighted.
So the Inflation Reduction Act's been a disaster. I'm looking at the EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin coming out and seeing all this green projects that are just boondoggles for people like Stacey Abrams and others. And also I see about something else wrapped up in there, and I see ads about this too. The so-called Biden pill penalty. Can you explain that?
Yeah, the Biden pill penalty was something that Democrats and Democrats only inserted into the Inflation Reduction Act. And you got to remember that not a single Republican in either the House or Senate voted for this thing. And what it does is that it treats different medicines differently, and it punishes innovation and the development of pill form medicine. And let's remember that pills are 71% cheaper than other types of medicines. They're cheaper to make, they're cheaper for patients, they're cheaper for the entire system. And people all across the spectrum warned Joe Biden and the Democrats that this was going to happen, talking about doctors, patients groups, the pharma industry, the business community, various conservative organizations. They all said this is going to happen. And what it has done is it's driven research and development dollars away from pills and towards what are called large molecule medicines, things that you get through an injection or an IV or an infusion, and you got to go to the hospital most of the time to get those things, and they're more expensive to patients and to the entire system. It's driving 70% of the research dollars away from pills. So new medicines and new cures for things like mental health, for Alzheimer's disease, for cancer, they're not currently being developed. The University of Chicago says 188 different cures have not been found because of this discrimination against pills, which again are 71% cheaper than those other forms of medicine. That's the Biden pill penalty. Everyone told the Democrats that was going to happen, but they did it anyway. So, and now Congress can step in and fix it.
So do they have to physically just put that in a single piece of legislation, or can they do that in the big, beautiful bill?
Well, either or. There is a piece of legislation that would fix the Biden pill penalty. It's called the EPIC Act, and that would do it. But the more likely vehicle is through the big, beautiful budget reconciliation, big and beautiful, as the president calls it. More likely, Congress will fix it that way in reconciliation. And the president signed an EO last week that instructed Secretary Kennedy to work with Congress to get rid of the Biden pill penalty. So President Trump is on board with this. Again, not a single Republican voted for this when Biden rammed it through, for inexplicably favoring one type of medicine over another when everyone knows that pills are cheaper to make, cheaper for patients, cheaper for the whole system by 71%. And Biden favored the more expensive types of medicine. It's insanity, but Republicans and President Trump can fix it.
Tim, thanks so much. Tim Murtaugh, I appreciate it.
Brian, as always, thank you.
You got it. Listen, when we come back, we go inside what's running a small town in America, Cox County, Tennessee. Mayor Glenn Jacobs joins us, and Tyrus will be here. Kane and Tyrus reunite. Also, don't forget to see me on stage, BrianKilmeade.com. I'll be in Dayton, June 21st. I'll be in August 23rd. I'll be in Dallas, and I'll be in September. You'll see me in Richmond, Virginia, BrianKilmeade.com. Don't miss a minute. It's all in conjunction with Fox Nation, too.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's not about the big crowds that come out to you when you're talking in a festival or wherever they are. I think it's because I think Bernie showed up at Coachella. That must have been fun for the fans. It's who shows up on election day. And I just don't see that's the ticket. I mean, Cory Booker, I know you've worked with him. I like Cory a lot from my home state of New Jersey. That's made right. A speech for 25 hours. Again, just each other off. This is just not what's going to get the job done.
I think he's 100% right. Well, let's ask Mayor Glenn Jacobs in from Knox County, Tennessee, a.k.a. if you're watching online on the stream right now on Fox Nation, he is the WWE Hall of Fame professional wrestler, Kane, but now he wants to be called mayor. And Tyrus, eventual future mayor, Tyrus from Fox Nation, from The Five, from Gutfeld, author of the book Nuff Said, and host of Maintaining Tyrus on Outkick. Welcome, guys. This is a reunion of sorts, right?
Yes. Well, yep. It's not really. Whenever we get a chance to see each other, yeah. It's past reunion nice. Times. He's been gracious with me when I first started at Fox. He gave me one of my first interviews. We had barbecue together. Yeah. So it's been we actually spent more time outside of wrestling together.
Yeah, I think we did, right? Yeah.
In the same building.
Right. So, Mr. Mayor, how do you like it?
It's great. You know, obviously it has its challenges, but at the same time.
Like, what are the challenges over in
well,
the
Well, just like every place else, you know, this budgetarily, we have some issues as far as how inflation has hit us over the past several years. The COVID years were not very much fun at all.
I know.
You know, those things weren't. You know, but just the things that every area is going to face. At the same time, we're a remarkable area. Our people are so nice and friendly. We have a lot going for us. And it's really cool to feel that you're part of something and hopefully setting some groundwork for a great future.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you just heard what Bill Maher said about big crowds and AOC and Bernie Sanders, do you think that means America wants to go socialist? Do you think they're getting the wrong message from that?
No, I don't think so at all. Those crowds actually pale in comparison to what Donald Trump pulls when he goes different places. And they also have to wonder how many of these people actually bust in, because it certainly seems anytime the Democrats do things that's one of their strategies. So definitely, you know, our country is growing apart. We can see that, you know, with all the division and divisiveness going on. At the same time, I think that, you know, you talk about big crowds, but it's also people being invested and feeling that they have a connection. And that's where Donald Trump, that's what the Democrats really can't figure out about him, is the fact that he has been able to really form a connection with everyday Americans. And what's happened to the Democrats is they've been able to form a connection with the elites, and that's about it. Everybody
right.
else
and
just
they don't
falls
know how
away.
Tyrus, they don't know how they got there. They used to be the part of the working class. They don't know how they ended up with just celebrities.
I'll happily tell them
go
how
ahead.
They got there. They allowed their party to become the party of activism. And
yep.
President Trump seized common sense. And so I don't see, in my travels, I only see the divisiveness on TV. I only see the divisiveness when the Democrats are in front of the camera. The country as a whole, I feel, is very positive. People feel yeah. very – people feel enlightened. They're not the issues that the Democrats are crying about do not come across dinner tables. No one is going, oh, man, I wonder how many illegal alien criminals are going to be deported tonight. Please
well,
pass the potatoes.
I can't wait to watch that guy play soccer against my girls.
Yeah, you know, like those things – exactly. Yeah. Those things are not on the board. They're out of touch, because when you are run by activists, the only way the activists – can continue is if there's controversy, and most activists make it up. It's a feelings, right. And they talk about things that aren't real. What President Trump has jumped on was the easiest thing in the world. It's how I make my living. Common sense. If a strike's a strike, it's a strike. If it's a ball, it's a ball. You don't say it could have been a strike, mm-hmm. but the oppressive pitcher put too much pressure on it, and then the catcher refused to pull it in. And that's why, you know, and people, when you start talking like you lose them, and that's the problem. No one's voting for AOC and Bernie Sanders. She needs to get back to her own district.
As
her red
Republican,
light district is horrible.
I'd love to see her run for president
yeah, all
as a
of
Republican.
Them.
I think it'd be
yeah.
great.
Right. And she is, according to some people, like Nate Silver has been pretty accurate. He thinks that she's likely to get the nomination. To me, that would be great news for Republicans.
Yeah, for the Republican Party.
Even though that, you know, she's comfortable in front of the camera, you know, she's comfortable on stage.
Is she? I see a lot of gaffes, a lot of weird mannerisms.
She puts on accents, but who doesn't?
Yeah. Well, I don't.
You don't? Okay.
No.
All right. So, a couple of things. They just did a Yale poll among Democrats for young people, and the two ones who are on top is one of the ones is John Fetterman, and the other one who's the most popular is Bill Moore. That to me would be scary, because when you have a guy like what Mitt Whitmer said 2 weeks ago, I'm going to work with the president when I can. He's very popular in Michigan. Thinking to myself, that's a good move, because what you could be is that common sense Democrat. I want to do it center left as opposed to way left.
Right. But yeah, 100% agree. When I talk about the country being more divided, Tyrus is exactly right. It's done on purpose, and it's really done by, I would say, the extremes of the Democrat Party. And when I talk to folks who are former Democrats, it's not that they've moved. It's that everything has shifted around them. So if the Democrats want to be competitive again, they have to move towards the middle. Instead, they keep on moving more and more towards the left. Obviously, as a Republican, that's great with me, but I don't think it's good for the country.
Do you feel like, Mayor, do you feel like this is public service for you? Or do you look at this as a job?
It is public service. You know, and I mean,
you've spent all day just helping people.
Well,
right?
I mean, and also, you know, there's a lot of other things that I could be doing. It's a great endeavor, but nevertheless, at the end of the day, you know, I don't look at it in what's in it for me, other than I hope that my kids and grandkids have a brighter future. You know, it's really about doing as much as I can to make our community just. It's a great place to make it even better.
Right.
And if I could just add, this is who he is. And this is, he's been a mayor long before he was a mayor. One of the things that I admired so much about him is when we were in the locker room in WWE, he would take time to talk to all of us, whether we were top of the card, bottom of the card. But he didn't talk about silly things. He would always say, like, manage your money. Think about your taxes. Think about your future. He was always pushing him and Daniel Bryant when they were tagged together. Our locker room was the debate of what to do. He was a planner. He was, you know, talking about in case of bad things happen, make sure you have this, make sure you have this in line. Wrestling's not forever. So he's always been very fiscally responsible. When around most guys are talking about how much we're bench pressing or what place is the best place to eat or hotels to sleep at. He always had that kind of a leadership role just naturally. Yeah. He just, and I always admired that a lot about him.
Thank you. And also with this job, you know, I can take it or leave it. I mean, you know, people are always asking me, what am I going to do next? And I'm not sure. I don't even know if that involves politics. And unfortunately, you know, we've reached a point in our country where a lot of folks, once, you know, they aspire to get into government, and once they're there, they never want to leave. And that's not a good thing either. So, you know, I just always just remind myself that I don't have to do this. And when those tough decisions come and there's going to be consequences for those, that's fine with me.
So, the other person is Stephen A. Smith, who's grading out.
Yeah, but again, this is, we're not even a year in yet.
Right.
The face of the party, we will have no idea. Here's the other thing. I don't think if the Democratic Party took the next 2 years to clean house, because what happened in the last 4 years is there was no president, and the extreme party, no, there was no president.
You're right.
And the extremes of the party got a hold of the purse strings. And they were spending, and they were making calls. And I guarantee you, if it was a healthy Joe Biden, I don't think it would have been much different. But in terms of the strength and the weirdness of the party, I don't think it would have came there. Joe was very very centrist, right. But this was not that same person anymore. So if they can clean out, if we have a common sense center Democratic representative, and we have a common sense Republican, win or lose, that's good for everybody.
You know what's great? It would be a fun debate.
Yes. Right?
And you know what the best thing to happen to Democrats? They should do what Obama and Hillary did. They had a real – and John Edwards. They had a real contest. So they went back and forth. You would watch. We would love covering. It was a great race. You know, Hillary surged at the end, got close, but he shocked the world. But we watched them go at each other in real debates. After that, Hillary had no competition. They made sure Joe Biden had no competition. They just wiped it all
out. Well, they didn't want them to lose.
Right.
Yeah, and then you see what happened with Kamala Harris. Yeah. And I think part of the reason that...
When they had a real competition, she failed.
Well, not only that, but then she just gets installed as their nominee after they decide to remove Biden. You know, I think for a lot of Democrats, that just turned them off because they're supposed to be the party of democracy. We have the Democrat elites that are making these decisions.
So the Wall Street Journal has a story today where the headline is, it's suddenly okay to point out Joe Biden's cognitive failings.
It's not okay.
Got four books coming out.
Everyone's trying to get in front of what's coming. I think the Doge thing has scared everyone because you follow the money. We were fleeced for 4 years. Like I said, these programs that were put together, they were nothing but money laundering schemes. And everyone's trying to get in front of it. And everyone who was a piece of it, who was a part of it, when those pardons came out, I think the most ridiculous one was the Fauci one. That clearly lets you know, and Joe Biden had absolutely no idea about these pardons. They were doing, and now people are going to start to talk, because what usually happens with, there's no honor among thieves. And this is not the all Democratic Party. I'm talking about the individuals who took advantage of a situation, because if they cared about their country, the day they realized that he couldn't have a conversation without reading from a cue card, they should have came out and been like, we got Article 57. I'm sorry, the president is not fit to serve.
Right.
But they didn't do that. They took it as an opportunity. You know what we can do? You know, and it was basically, and that's what it is. And now everyone's trying to get in front of it. So coming out now is too late. Jumping out and say, hey, we got to get rid of woke. No, it's too late. Woke's already done. They're just trying to distance themselves. That's why I had Bill Maher, like now you want to push away from it and kind of play both sides of the fence.
But at least Maher was calling out how bad a president he was. Like he wasn't saying he's failing.
When did that start? Right. When it was over.
He was one of the first. Yeah. I would give him the least discredit.
Yeah, but it was still a little too late.
It was more a reaction to the election than anything else.
Yes.
You know, and that's one of the things that really bothers me is, you know, so much is just focused around who's in power as opposed to what's good for the country. And we can certainly see that. I think it's what Tyrus is talking about. We could see that all through Biden's administration is we all knew this was bad. But Democrats are in power, and if you say, oh, my gosh, there's an issue with the president, then we lose the election. We can't have that, so we're just going to cover it up.
So, Mr. Mayor, you know what bothers me most? They were just telling me that Charlie Gasparino is reporting that Musk is going to announce tomorrow that he's leaving Doge.
Oh, no.
And here's the major problem. This goes to show you, if you are a successful business person, semi-celebrity, if you want to risk your capital and your companies, that's what happens when you go into government. And to me, this is Benjamin Franklin of our generation, the Henry Ford of our generation. The fact that he goes into government, I know he's a little abrasive and can be a little, little thuggish sometimes by the way he operates. But this is a loss for the country. And it's because of Tesla.
Well, I think it's a lot of things. I think what he was doing is not typical. This is not normally a celebrity going into government. He is going after corruption in the highest form of the federal government, and you think they were just going to let him just come in there? Yeah. So they're doing these attacks, and I think – but what him leaving will take the focus off, but the team that he has in place is going to continue.
I hope
so. He's got the best and brightest in there, right. And I think him stepping out, they'll then change the tune to whomever is the top guy. Suddenly they'll go after him. So I think Musk, I think it was – him stepping down, they're going to think they got some kind of victory, but I don't think it is a victory.
Mayor Glenn Jacobs is here, better known as first known as Kane, and Tyrus is sticking around a few more minutes. WrestleMania was this weekend. We got to get these guys to weigh in. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Cover by Cena. Pat's in the ring. John Cena has set the record. John Cena is the 17-time world champion.
You may not like it. In fact, you probably hate it. Like it or not, John Cena is the GOAT. There is no longer a debate. With a 17th world title, John Cena is the greatest of all time.
So there goes. John Cena beats Cody Rhodes for the championship. Wow, look at your body language, Tyrus.
Huh?
Look at your body.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
So you're upset by this?
No, I already worked out. So I'm anytime I hear the crowd and the bell, I start thinking I would have kicked out at two and then I would have put him in the bomb. But I couldn't be happier. John is a class act. It's common knowledge what he did for me, my WrestleMania moment. We got cut and Vince was like, I don't know what we can do. And then John looked at me and the gorilla and he goes, I have to go to the bathroom. It's going to take me like 6 to 8 minutes. And I said, six. And I went out and I did Mama Clay and the thing, and I wouldn't have had that moment had it not been for him. That's a top guy who didn't need to do anything for anyone.
Right.
So for him to get that, I think it's great. And I think Cody, his stock's going to go up too. Nobody loses in a match like that.
Yeah.
And that's what you want.
And I mean, WrestleMania, again, 61,000 people, I think, at this year's event, a two-night show. When I first started, we were still doing those in arenas back in 1997, my first match. My first WrestleMania as Kane against The Undertaker, we had about 20,000 people at it. It was at the new Boston Garden or whatever that is now. You know, to think to where it's evolved now, then with everything that surrounds it as far as their the WWE world, I think they call it, with all the autograph sessions and appearances and exhibits. It's an unbelievable event. Yeah, it's an unbelievable event.
So how are they doing without Vince at the helm?
Right now Paul Levesque, Triple H, is over talent relations, and I think things are going very, very well.
Wrestler himself, right?
Yeah, he has the greatest wrestling mind of anybody I've ever met. And I don't just mean as far as in ring or, you know, we talk about like putting matches together. His understanding of the wrestling business is it's a different level than everyone else's. And then you look on the other side with the production side and the TV side, and they're drawing more revenue than they ever have. So the company's actually doing better than we were talking about the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
But the company's actually in better financial shape than it was when I was there throughout the Attitude Era, which is the previous high water point.
What makes Triple H so unique in this is that he started at the very bottom of the wrestling world. I think his name was Terror Rising, and he came. It was WCW. Oh, by the way, I recently watched a video of you with a vest when you were kind of an arrogant bad guy in WCW. He had a really cool name. I went to send it to you, but I'll do that later. But,
keep it to yourself. I don't want to see that.
No, it was good. It was good. Oh, Sting got you. But but the thing about Triple H is that he's been through every part of it. He's been through the worst part of it. He had that match where Warrior War wouldn't sell anything, and he had to wrestle in pig slop, and then he just kept continuing to evolve and grow, and he's one of the great minds, and he learned underneath all – he was underneath Vince all that time, so he could take the good and the bad, and he put it together. And he was, and the one thing I liked about him, and I always say that he was fair and honest, and that's very rare. Like, if you weren't going to get what you wanted, he's going to be the first one to be like, hey, it's not your time, or you're not ready yet, or whatever. There's no BS with Triple H.
What about – was it the ECW, the other one? Oh, what's the one over it with the Khan?
Way to do research. Nice.
Khan.
AEW. Yeah.
Listen, the more wrestling companies you have, AEW, NWA, New Japan, TNA, the more you have, that means more opportunities for the boys and the women.
But it's not great for the sport, is it?
It's wonderful for the sport.
Competition's always good.
Here's the thing. Sometimes you can be in a place too long. And the one thing that was nice about the old eras and the territories is, let's say Dusty Rhodes was champ and he was doing his thing and then he lost and then they're pushing the other guy and he's kind of in the shuffle. So, hey, you know what? I'm going to go to Memphis. And it's nice where you – like, look at Cody. He went to AEW.
Because I never saw Dusty Rhodes because I was in the Northeast.
Right. But you having other places to go to reinvent yourself, hell, if I didn't go to TNA, Tyrus never would have been born. So, I mean, it's just you need places to go. And then I went to the NWA, and finally, you know, I got the NWA championship at the Super Bowl. You can grow and evolve, and it's good to have places to go.
Yeah, and competition's always good. Back during the Monday Night Wars, which was basically us against WCW, that was where a lot of the things that we see now as far as just the business changing, that's why they happen.
Mayor Glenn Jacobs, thanks so much. Tyrus, always great. I would have been a great wrestler. It's too bad you didn't have time to respond.
Manager, you and Jimmy Hart.
Really?
Pound for pound. I think Jimmy's like the Wizard? A little bit more muscular than your mom, though.
I'm thinking fighter.
Brian, something
I was thinking
me.
Fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We asked people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.